This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. On the show today, we have music director of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, Chester Always, along with one of the performers on this coming Sunday's Bachtoberfest performance. Violinist Zachary Caratine is here to give us a little demonstration and play some music on a Baroque violin. In the later portion of the show, Lisa Gay Dixon, who is Associate Professor of Theater at the University of Illinois Department of Theater and also Director for Sam Shepard's play Buried Child, which is currently underway at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. She will be joining us to talk about that play in the later portion of the show. It's all in Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Stay tuned. We heard a trio sonata of George Frideric Handel. We heard two movements of it. The last two of his sixth sonata from the set Opus 2, played here by London Baroque on FM 90.9's Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. One of the performers who will play another of those trio sonatas by Handel at Sunday's Bachtoberfest, put on by the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, is with us on the show today, Zachary Caratine. Is conductor, violinist, and composer, and more, I think. And he's going to be doing us a little demonstration of the Baroque violin and play some Bach for us, although Sunday's concert is all Handel, as is most of everything that the Baroque artists are doing this year, in this Handel year. Also with us, the Bach's music director, Chester Always, who continues to hold the record for largest number of appearances on Live and Local since we got this show started. Dubious distinction, I suppose. So thanks, Chet, for coming in, and thanks, Zach, also.
Sure.
Chet, why don't you first, for those who have yet to encounter the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, give us a bit of a history of the group.
This is our 14th season, Kevin. I think did we start the same year?
We, meaning Bach and Prairie Ensemble. Yeah. We did, in fact, yes.
Yeah, so we've both been in the same length of time, and we, like you, are a not-for-profit, very much a not-for-profit organization. We do four concerts a year, and this first concert, though, is, while it's part of the season, has been a distinctly different event. This may indeed be the last such event, because it's a lot of work to put on a silent auction and a concert program and a dinner in the same night. So we're thinking about changing that format. But this will, you know, for those who haven't been to one, it's a lot of fun. The concert will take place at Lincolnshire Fields Country Club in their dining room there.
In Champaign.
In Champaign, over just west of Interstate 57. And it will feature a silent auction, an Oompa band, with Maria Mercolo and company. German food prepared by my son, I have to brag. He's the executive chef there, and that's, I think, the main draw. No offense to the musicians, but the German wine and the German beer and his excellent cuisine is really great, and people seem to enjoy that.
That'll just make the music sound even better.
Yeah. I think it all complements each other. So this is a concert that, while it's part of the season, is separate from the season. And actually, I'm not involved in this concert at all. Charlotte Maddox, my colleague and harpsichordist and early music specialist, is leading this concert. It's all chamber music for some of the same reasons I suspect that you did the Schubert Octet, to try to keep the numbers and costs down.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other topic.
Without sacrificing the quality of the music any way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
So we're doing two trio sonatas by Handel from Opus 2. The first one in C minor. It also exists as B minor, but more commonly, I think, done in C minor, right?
I've played it in both
played
keys.
Played both ways. And C minor certainly works better with F major than B does.
Right.
And then we're doing the F major and the C minor. Charlotte's playing some harpsichord music from a suite in G minor, and Nick Del Villano, virtuoso trumpet player, is going to play a little suite that Handel called the Water Piece. Why, I'm not quite sure.
Not to be confused
not with the water music. No, right. Not at all.
Which we actually heard earlier on the station, I heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the it's all Handel, as will be the major work in December. Well, we can talk about the season.
Well, you mentioned it, so what's the major work in December?
Messiah, Part 1.
That's part of the annual Christmas extravaganza
at
that
Cole
Bach
Cross.
Always puts on.
So we've been doing for a number of years a Messiah sing-along last Sunday in November, and we will do that again this year at McKinley Presbyterian Church. It's a come one, come all kind of thing. Pay $5, bring your score, we'll loan you one. But this year, it's going to be the orchestra's first rehearsal. So they're going to be sight reading, probably just strings, and so it won't be organ accompaniment, it'll be an orchestral accompaniment, which will be a new experience for those who really want to get up close and personal with the work. But then we'll be doing the work with the Bach chorus and soloists in December. And this year, for the first time, that concert will not include any German music, other than Handel, who's German and English. We're doing all English carols this year.
Yeah, you've typically done German carols as the second part of the program.
Right. But this year it's all English, including, I hope, some pieces from Nicholas Temperley's newly published book of carols that he has arranged and that he and his family have sung for years that Stainer and Bell published.
Nicholas Temperley is a professor emeritus of musicology at the University of Illinois.
And a former president of our board. And this is something he's generated over his life, and his family's gone out every Christmas and sung, and Marlis and I have had the great good pleasure of singing with them sometimes, and so this is a way of highlighting his contribution to our group and this wonderful new book that he's published.
Speaking of new books, mm-hmm. did I read that you're going to be signing copies of your new book?
There will be a copy of my book and a copy of Nicholas's book signed for on the auction.
Tell us about your new book. This has been forever in the making.
Yeah. This is not the one you think it is.
It is not. Oh,
it's a different one.
Oh, okay. Well, then.
It's only a year old. The book that we're auctioning off is a copy of the book that Roger Dean published in August called Handel's Messiah, The Solo Variants. As you know, I'm sure, Handel never really figured out what Messiah was supposed to be. He kept changing it for different performances with singers who changed and kept rewriting and transposing, which has led to this complex group of pieces, particularly for the solo music, less so for the choruses, but some arias in different keys with different voices, different lengths, and so forth. And my publisher had the brilliant idea, I think, of putting all of it together in one place. So whatever version of Messiah you want to do, now you can buy one book, and it's all there, as well as historical commentary and performance practice information.
So the other book that I was thinking of is a while in coming still.
Yes, but I just got an email from Oxford this morning, and they are saying, let's move ahead. So that was the first I've heard since I turned the manuscript in July, so I think it's a very good sign.
And this is a history of all of choral music.
Well, Western choral music and up through the end of the 20th century, with some exceptions, because it can't be everything. So some of the more geographically centered music is not discussed, but it's basically choral music in the Western tradition.
Yeah, so we'll look forward to
that's
seeing
the tone.
That.
Yeah, that's another matter altogether.
Well, when that comes out, maybe we'll have you on just to talk about that.
I'd be
and play
happy
lots
to.
Of examples yeah. or something yeah. like that. We're talking with Chester Allwiss, music director of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, who are giving their annual Bachtoberfest program. It's more than a concert. It's a dinner. It's an auction. There will be beer and. There will be lots of music as well. Some of it played by my other guest on this portion of Live and Local, who is Zachary Carateen, who is currently in Urbana-Champaign as a graduate student at the University of Illinois in what exactly?
Orchestral conducting.
That's what I was thinking.
I'm a student of Maestro Donald Schleicher.
But you're also a well-traveled violinist, conductor at various places, including a new job you've got this year, a youth orchestra in...
In Lafayette, Indiana. It's the Wabash Valley Youth Symphony.
Also, congratulations on getting that position, by
Thank you.
And a composer as well. You've written for and played with this... What is the name of that crazy circus group? Bandaloop?
Project Bandaloop. They're an aerial vertical dance company that... performs on vertical, for example, the side of buildings, the side of mountains, generally suspended from climbing ropes.
It's sort of like Cirque du Soleil with music?
In fact, yes, but they're more dance and less circus, less theater.
And even more dangerous.
Yeah.
Perhaps. I think they have very good safety people, and they're very conscientious.
Yeah, and you don't get up on the side of the mountain yourself.
Well, I have. I've done a couple of buildings where I was seated on the roof, leaning over the ledge, roped in, of course, to an anchor, with tension on the rope so that I could actually lean out over the dancers.
Okay, don't talk about that anymore. Chet and I are both cringing over here. I got a height thing. But you're here today to talk about and give us a little demonstration on another of your areas of interest, which is specific to Baroque violin playing.
Indeed.
How does that fit into this whole rest of the picture? Where did you get your yen for that?
Well, when I was 15 years old, living in Houston, Texas, I had a wonderful private violin teacher, Kenneth Goldsmith, who later I continued to work with at Rice University. And we began looking at Mozart manuscripts, Bach manuscripts, first editions, and messing around with Baroque bows and Baroque violin and gut strings. And he handed me all of the resources, all of the equipment. So it's been very much a part of my education as a violinist to consider original instruments and original sources for the music.
And you've been playing in a group. Actually, you were on this show once before. We didn't hear any live playing. You brought in a recording with us with a group that you play in. Is it based in California?
Well, the cellist is in California and the harpsichordist is in New York, and that's my trio, Eris. And I'm also working with a Baroque orchestra in Los Angeles, one in Houston, and one in New York this school year.
Three different Baroque orchestras.
I'm a substitute, sort of a guest concertmaster with each group.
How is it that you actually accomplish anything whatsoever if when you're running around all these different places, trying to do a master's degree here, which I know takes up an enormous amount of time on its own?
In fact, I have a tremendous amount of score study. I'm learning a great deal, and naturally I'm tired often, but I love what I'm doing.
You better had. Or otherwise it wouldn't happen. So you brought along this violin. I had asked you in an email, I don't know, this morning or last night, if you could bring both your violins, the modern one and the Baroque one, so we could hear a good contrast demonstration. And you informed me that there is only one, and you've currently turned your modern violin into a Baroque violin. How did you do that?
In fact, I had a couple of instruments, and 3 years ago when I decided to get serious about conducting study, I decided to take a year off from playing and to go to Bucharest, Romania, and really devote my attention to conducting study. And so I sold an instrument to buy myself that year. And since then, I've been using gut strings and metal strings alternately on one violin for everything, using a Baroque bow and a modern bow, and taking the chin rest on and off. And finally, I got tired of doing all that. And this year, I decided to play just the Baroque violin. And I'm in the process of converting this instrument. It has a bridge and a sound post and a tailpiece and a fingerboard and many of the subtle things that have been done to make it more responsive to the lower tension and thicker sheep gut strings. The next operation would be to change the angle of the neck slightly to get an even warmer sound.
So the gut strings is what would have been typical in the Baroque era.
In fact, the years 1913 to 1929 mark the major change to metal strings, partly due to the unavailability of gut during World War I. People started to use other materials. But other factors come into play, such as larger concert halls, changing tastes in music, in music composition, and so forth.
I know that you're going to do some movements from a Bach suite. What kind of Bach suite is will be an interesting discussion briefly. But while you get set up, I'd like to hear a little bit of a demonstration of the one thing you can vary easily, which is the difference of the bows.
In fact.
While you do that, I'm going to make this little announcement to say that WILL's program on Live and Local today is made possible with support from Columbia Street Roastery, roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign, also offering a variety of tea and chai, open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m., and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713. Coming up in the later portion of Live and Local, 12:30, 12:35 or so, we'll be talking with Professor Lisa Gay Dixon of the University of Illinois Department of Theater. She's one of the acting professors there, and she's also directing Sam Shepard's play Buried Child, which is currently in production at the Department of Theater, the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. They've got performances this week and maybe next as well. I have to check my schedule, but we'll be talking with her in the later portion of Live and Local today. So you have in your hand what looks like a modern bow.
In fact, yes. And the modern bow design is essentially 1780 by François Tourte in Paris. But it is the design that we still use today. So I'll demonstrate just a little bit on that.
Okay, so that's the modern one, but playing on this hybrid violin that has been sort of baroqueized. So that we get a little idea. Now you have the Baroque bow, which is different in what way, physically?
Well, the Baroque bow is convex rather than concave and is designed to have a natural decay to the sound and to be springy and buoyant. They varied in lengths and weight and design all over Europe from town to town. There really was no standardization in the instrument setup at all until much later. So I'll demonstrate just a little bit on the Baroque bow.
So what is that piece you're playing?
Oh, I'm just noodling.
Yeah, because it sounds rather English. And it was intriguing, and I thought, I'd like to hear the rest of the piece. Well, nice noodling, Mr. Composer.
Thank you.
Now, not only is the bow physically different, but you play it differently. You hold it differently, which affects the way it sounds as well.
Indeed. The modern bow design is much more about sustaining the sound and creating long legato lines. There are long legato lines, certainly, in the Baroque music, especially in Handel. But I believe much of that line was created by the acoustic space in which the violinists were playing. They tended to play in small chambers made of stone. So the legato was created by the acoustic environment. One didn't have to do it with the bow so much. In fact, they had to be much more concerned with separating the sound between notes. Otherwise, you would hear three or four notes at once because of the echo in the chamber. So a lot of times when we read treatises as to violin style, one thing that one needs to remember is the acoustic environment in which they were playing, that when a treatise suggests a certain bow stroke, that may not be the sound that they're suggesting. It may be the stroke to achieve a different sound entirely. So certainly it's a challenge in today's carpeted spaces and large spaces to play period instruments.
Like the one we're sitting in, but we have the advantage of a little electronics, so we can add some of that feeling of the stone-walled room. It would be chilly if we were sitting in a stone-walled room right now, I think. Zach, you mentioned, actually, let me tell our listeners, if you're just tuning in, that you are listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9, and our conversation is with Zachary Carotene, who is going to be one of the performers on the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana's annual Bachtoberfest program, which is this coming Sunday at Lincolnshire Fields Country Club in Champaign. Chet Always is the music director. What time does that start, Chet?
It's. I'm glad you asked. Technically, it opens at 6 o'clock, and that's with drinks and hors d'oeuvres and Umba band and viewing the auction. The concert portion will start around 7:30, 7:45.
And you do want people to have advance reservations for this.
Yes.
If they want to eat anyway.
Yes, and so we need to have a number, by Thursday maybe, or tomorrow or Thursday.
Can they do that on the website?
Yes.
BaroqueArtists.org.
Right.
And it's a new website. I've just been starting to explore it. So it looks very good.
Oh, good. Thank you.
So far, far as I've gotten on it. I was going to ask you, Zach, you mentioned earlier the lack of a chin rest. You had yours taken off. So I gather in the Baroque era, they didn't use those things.
That's right. The chin rest was designed in the early 1800s and over the course of many decades gained popularity. The primary function of it is in downshifting, where one moves the hand away from the neck. It helps keep the violin from being pulled away from the body. Another benefit of the chin rest is that it probably makes constant vibrato easier. So as styles changed, the equipment changed. I don't use one on the Baroque violin because the chin rest clamps onto the instrument, creating a more focused tone, and I think it's better to have a rounder, more wooden flute type sound out of the Baroque violin.
So it acts as a damper, in other words.
I think so. It changes the sound. Anything you put on the instrument with weight or pressure makes a more focused sound, which has benefits when one is trying to make a particular kind of sound. But with the Baroque violin, it's a more diffused tone, I believe.
Okay, well, with all this conversation, we're leading up to a bit of a performance here, which you're going to do of not music of Handel, but of Bach, not for the violin. Why?
Oh, I play the violin sonatas and partitas by Bach for violin solo, but I also have played three of the 6 cello suites, and I think they're glorious pieces of music. I have a friend at University of California, Davis, who's working on a project that involves looking at the cello suites as etudes for the study of improvisation. And I think they're very expansive works. And the Baroque violin is generally tuned a half step lower than the modern violin. However, I tuned a whole step, that is to say 2 half steps lower for today, just to get a little more of that darkness that
French
the cello.
Chamber pitch.
In fact, and
so
yes.
That's about as close as you can get a violin to the depth of the cello. In other words.
Sadly, yes.
So instead of A440, it's A392.
I'll take your word for it.
Yep.
Okay, this is Zachary Carratine performing one of the cello suites?
I think I'll do the D minor cello suite, which I'm fingering in A minor, but the resulting sound is G minor because of my tuning.
Okay, you're beyond us.
And
so
this is a saraband.
Great.
It's a slow dance.
Play it.
Thank you.
The Sarabande from the D minor cello suite by Johann Sebastian Bach, played here on the violin. That was not a cello, by Zachary Carratine. You did a, and this is on an instrument that is a modified modern instrument to be as close as you can get to a Baroque violin with a Baroque bow, etc., as we were talking earlier. You were doing a little effect with your left hand, with your fingering hand. It was not exactly a trill, but kind of, what was that?
I'm glad you noticed that. That's a more of a 17th century ornament, and the reason I like to do it in the Sarabande is because I think generally when Bach is writing Sarabandes for keyboard, violin, or cello, he's looking backwards, retrospectively, to earlier forms, and that dance is always a very special dance in his compositions. So I like to also think backwards to earlier styles.
So show the effect I was talking about.
Sure. Another way to do it would be...
And that one you're just doing with the bow.
Right, that's a trillo, or a vocal ornament.
I was going to say, yeah, that sounds like something that, vocalists would do sort of almost by shaking themselves, but not shaking their voices, but not quite. It's a beautiful sound.
Thank you.
I hope that came across well to our listeners. Do you have one of the fast movements?
Sure.
You've got a couple of minutes. Might as well hear some
more. While he's doing that, I'll just say that one of the things that the Baroque artist does is not this, in that this is exceptional, which is why Zach's here today. We don't normally perform it old pitch with old instruments. We perform it 440, and it's a different problem to try to get the S elements of the style using modern instruments, because the reality is that most people, unlike Zach, don't have the knowledge or the access to the instruments. That's why Charlotte's doing this, not me.
Charlotte Maddox, who's the harpsichord professor at the University of Illinois. And if you did have a bunch of people who aren't trained, as Zach is, in playing this style, it's not going to sound very good.
Right.
So you're better off doing as much as you can with the style on the new modern instruments and so on.
Well, I can't decide. Would you prefer a courante or a gigue?
Gigue.
Okay.
I'll be definitive for once. Gigues are good. Gigues are good dances. And it's not exactly an Irish jig, but this is one of all of the suites of Bach, or nearly all of the suites of Bach, are in dance forms of some kind or another.
That's right, and the partitas for solo violin as well.
Zachary Carratine performing here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. He will be joining other members of the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, violinist Maureen Murchie, cellist Benjamin Hayek, and harpsichordist Charlotte Maddox, in a program of music all by Handel, also trumpeter Nicholas Del Villano playing on that program, which is called Bachtoberfest. It's Bachtoberfest 14, as a matter of fact. This Sunday evening, doors open at 6. You can start munching at 6:30. There's food and beer and other things at Lincolnshire Fields Country Club in Champaign. For more information and to make your reservations, which you do need to do, if you want to go to that event, go to baroqueartists.org. My guests on Live and Local this portion of the show, Zachary Carotene, of course, whom you just heard, and Chester Always, who's music director of Bach. Thank you all very much for coming
in.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
And in just a few moments, we will hear from Lisa Gay Dixon, who is director of the University of Illinois Department of Theater's production of Sam Shepard's play, Buried Child. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Music by Ry Cooter for the film from 1984 called Paris, Texas, screenplay by Sam Shepard. Sam Shepard is the playwright of Buried Child, which is a production currently being put on by the Department of Theater at the University of Illinois at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. They started it a week ago and are continuing through this Sunday. The director of the show, Lisa Gay Dixon, who's also a professor of theater at the University of Illinois, is with us to talk about that in just a few minutes. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. And here are a few other items on our calendar. The Decatur Municipal Band is performing tonight at 7:30 in Decatur at the Tabernacle Baptist Church. At the University of Illinois Assembly Hall in Urbana, it's the musical version of a film called The Wedding Singer. That's at 7:30 tonight. Illinois State University faculty tubist is giving a recital tonight at 8 o'clock at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts. My Name is Rachel Corey is a one-woman show at the Station Theater in Urbana. And that is Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and beyond that as well at 8 o'clock. Orquestra de Sao Paulo from Brazil is performing at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts Wednesday night at 7:30, featuring virtuoso percussionist Dame Evelyn Glennie. And then Sam Shepard, Buried Child, continues beginning Wednesday. 7:30 performances Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And is it a Sunday matinee or a Sunday evening performance? 3
Sunday
o'clock?
Sunday matinee at 3 p.m.
3 o'clock. And that is Lisa Gay Dixon, who is associate professor of theater, specifically of acting. Is that right?
That is correct.
But she is also a director, which is why she's directing this show, Buried Child by Sam Shepard. Tell us about Sam Shepard.
What would you like to know? Well, here's what I know about him. A lot of folks, probably in the 30 and under generation, think of him mostly as an actor. And those of us who know, who are in the world of theater, know that he started out as a playwright. He started out as an actor and then moved on to playwriting. What I can tell you about him is really mostly my impression of him through his work. He's a fine actor and a bit of a rebel, but he certainly represents a particular ethos about the American West and the idea of freedom and the price that you have to pay for freedom and family and belonging the journey to the self. And he also does it with a wicked, sort of very dark sense of humor. So he's been very popular with universities for productions as well as, of course, professional work. This is a Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Buried Child. And the revised version of it was done in 96, I believe, at Steppenwolf. And we're using the revised version of the script, some small but significant changes there. For me, Sam Shepard represents much of what I said earlier, but also there is a very searching quality to his work. And that search the actors do both for themselves and also for the characters in the work. So.
And do you think that it, you said it was particularly appealing to university programs, specifically to the students?
Oh, very much so. I mean, there have been one of his plays, True West, has I would be hard pressed to give you a year in which students have not sort of discovered, young male students have not discovered that work and been literally transformed by it and want to either do scene work from it or put a production of it on. And I have used Fool for Love and True West and other of his works in my teaching. So there is a particular thing in there about self-identity that I think a lot of young men in particular, but young women too, also connect with. And that's why they're so interested in working on his plays in class. And I think they're very helpful in that aspect because it gives the students something to really be familiar with and grasp onto in their training.
We'll talk specifically about Buried Child in just a minute, but I was just looking over a list of films that Sam Shepard has been in case, I mean, this is something, I haven't seen all these, but I've heard his name as an actor, and just in case people haven't placed him, the ones I personally have heard of, Days of Heaven, I remember, The Right Stuff, he actually got an Oscar for his portrayal of Chuck Yeager, and then Paris, Texas, right after that. Crimes of the Heart, Steel Magnolias he was in, The Pelican Brief. There's lots and lots more. He did Hamlet on screen.
Thunderheart, I believe.
Yeah.
With Val Kilmer.
Here's one I haven't heard of, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. I have, in fact. I remember reading a review of that. Anyway, that's just an idea of some of the films that he's done, but the list of plays is just about as long.
Absolutely.
Did you choose Buried Child, or was that chosen for you, or how did that happen?
It was chosen to be part of our season. We're doing a season that speaks to... both addresses American classics from American playwrights, and then also plays that speak specifically to the American ethos. So there is a play about hip-hop that's coming on as well. So this play was chosen, and I was asked to direct it. And I had seen it and had read it, and but felt a bit daunted about it, but sort of plunged into it. I have some very good actors who have helped me to realize the vision of that. And so that's how that came about really last year. And I've been working on it since probably January of this year. I was given it near the end of last year. So
you said you found it daunting. Did you have the option of saying, I'd really rather do a different one?
Well, I had the option, but I understand. But, you know, I like the challenge, so was very happy to... you know, move forward with that. It was daunting for me because of the manner in which the story unfolds. And I wanted to be clear in terms of how I could have the story unfold both and give the audience enough information to be clear about the storyline, but also allow them the space to come to their own conclusions about some things. And the playwright himself is very good at walking that very fine line. A lot of folks are a bit confused at the intermission, and then everything sort of falls together, but there are still some, as I said before, he had revised it and made a couple of things, very small but very significant changes in lines here and there. And those clarified some of the story at the same time that it still left storylines and time, you know, the passage of time a bit problematical. My dramaturg, Zach Ross, speaks about that Sam Shepard is an actor's dream and a director's nightmare because of some of those kinds of things. His language, his use of text, his creating of the arc of a scene and of a character are quite brilliant, and it's very meaty stuff for the actors to be able to sink their teeth into. But at the same time, because some of it is a bit fantastical, it's sometimes difficult to figure out how do you portray that on stage. And it's a challenge, but it's a fun challenge. And I think we did a pretty good job of clarifying things and also of allowing things to be, those things to be cloudy that need to be cloudy, if that makes sense.
I'm talking with Lisa Gay Dixon here on Live and Local on FM 90.9 about Sam Shepard's play Buried Child, which the Department of Theater at the University of Illinois is putting on currently. This is Live and Local, and we'll continue with that conversation in just a moment. Let me mention that our program is made possible with support from Parkland Art Gallery at Parkland College, seeking to expand appreciation of various art forms, promote the development of artist talent, and encourage aesthetic awareness. The gallery's exhibitions and educational programs are offered free of charge to the public.
You've heard us talking about the Member Match. Well, on Wednesday, October 14th at 7 a.m., we're going to put that money to work. It's our Power Hour. In just 60 minutes, we hope to raise a day's worth of pledges. And we can only do it with your help. So please, mail a check or call 217-333-7300 today. Remember, more power now means fewer hours of pledge drive.
Lisa, why don't you give us a bit of that, the basic plot of Buried Child.
The basic plot is that there is a family, and this is set in Illinois, somewhere in rural Illinois. Sam is specific about that. But it's about a quote-unquote dysfunctional farm family, and they have a secret. And you could probably guess the secret from the title of the play. But the question as to how that secret comes out and is acknowledged is the journey through the play. A young man named Vince and his girlfriend Shelley come home from New York. They're heading out to visit their father in New Mexico, and they make a stop at their grandparents' place, Hallie and Dodge, and no one remembers who Vince is. And it's part of Vince's increasingly desperate attempts to get them to recognize him are a major part of the play, as well as the fact that his father, whom he was going to visit, is actually back home at his parents' farm. So, and his father is finding that land that has lain fallow for many years is suddenly sprouting corn, sweet corn, and carrots, and there is something happening that is causing new things to occur in the family, and whether or not Vince is the catalyst, or whether or not Tilden, his father, returning home is the catalyst, or the buried child is the catalyst, are part of what the audience needs to figure out and define for themselves. So that's basically the plot, but it deals with the idea of when you suppress memories, bad memories, what happens to the good memories? Can you also suppress those parts of your life as well? And is it, you know, is that, are you willing to pay that price in order to have a semblance of peace of mind?
I was reading a description of the play, and the initial part of the description, generally talking about it, kept talking about things like dismay, disillusionment, the deterioration of the family, of the American family, and all these really horribly depressing sounding things. And then it went on to say that the play is funny.
Very much so. And as a director, I think it's partly because I have a slightly skewed vision of life. I always look for the funny, the absurd, if you will. And it's there, and we make sure that it is that it's there for the audience as well. If this were not funny, then this would be sort of an epic Greek tragedy of sorts. It does absolutely address these ideas of memory and family and belonging. And there are some very poignant and horrifying moments, but it is most definitely a black comedy because, and you know, I don't presume to speak for Shepard himself, but I do know for me that even in one's most dire moments, one can find a manner of humor with which not only to get through the darkest times, but to illustrate some of the truths of the moment. And so humor is most definitely a part of the play, and laugh out loud humor, not just wry amusement, but laugh out loud as well. So it runs the gamut in that sense.
That sounds encouraging. So people won't be slitting their wrists as they leave the
Absolutely not. Leave the Absolutely not.
When we were talking about having you come on the show, I asked you for some thoughts on some music that mm-hmm. we might play in the course of this conversation, mm-hmm. which you found interestingly stimulating, and you picked one particular piece mm-hmm. and one particular recording. Mm-hmm. Why?
If you're talking about the Hellhound,
I am
on the particular recording. Both the Hellhound on My Trail, originally by Robert Johnson, but the version was the one by Cassandra Wilson that I was interested in. I think because it sort of came to mind immediately for me, and I think there is something quite mythic in that idea of trying to escape one's past, the Hellhounds on the Trail, and knowing at the same time that one can never really escape where one has come from. And I think that song speaks volumes. And I think her particular recording of it is both lyrical and ghostly. And there are moments in the play that I think are represented by that.
This is Robert Johnson's Hellhound on My Trail, a performance by Cassandra Wilson from her disc called Blue Light Till Dawn. We'll hear a little bit of it here on Live and Local. In our conversation about Sam Shepard's play, Buried Child, with Lisa Gay Dixon, director of that production at the University of Illinois.
You sprinkle Hartford powder
Cassandra Wilson singing Robert Johnson's Hellhound on My Trail. I wish we had time to actually play the whole thing, but as so often happens on this show, the time moves quickly, at least for those of us offering the show to you. I'm Kevin Kelly. This is Live and Local. My guest in this portion of the show is Lisa Gay Dixon, directing Buried Child by Sam Shepard at the Krannert Center, put on by the University of Illinois Department of Theater. Lisa, what do you think the students have found particularly challenging about this play?
I think much of it is the idea of the search for belonging, and many of them are just now beginning to, as they move into early adulthood, think about these things in depth. And we ask them to think about them in their acting training, but to have the experiences to really think deeply and be affected by these things. And I think that that's what they find the most challenging, but what is also really quite fascinating and interesting for them. So, you know, I think they do a really good job of bringing themselves to the characters and using their own lives, things that they haven't thought about, being able to use that in their work. So I think that's really helpful for them.
And what do you find especially challenging in 1 minute mm-hmm. about working with college students versus, say, working on a play like this with professionals?
Well, it's very interesting because I do have two professional actors, Joy Hofsummer and Gary Ambler, who are playing Dodge and Hallie, the grandmother and grandfather.
You got two good ones.
Yes, I got two very good ones. I'm quite lucky. And I think what's challenging is sometimes it is difficult to relay some of the depth of the issues for the students, but they do get to see these two actors working in a really sort of free, open, and emotionally chaotic, contained chaos, if you will. And they're able to jump in feet first. They become pretty fearless in doing that, and that's what makes a production successful, I think.
Lisa Gay Dixon, thank you very much for coming on Live and Local.
Thank you for having me.
And let us know when your next play is. And
I certainly will.
We'll chat some more, or your next project, whatever it happens to be.
We'll see. When I find out, I'll let you know.
Buried Child is at the Krannert Center through Sunday. Performances Wednesday through Saturday at 7:30, Sunday at 3 o'clock in the Studio Theater.
Can I make just one quick... just one quick thing. They may say that it's sold out, but there is a waiting list, and we often, very often, get folks in on that are on the waiting list, so don't be discouraged if you... go to the box office and find that out.
And if you do want to bring children, be aware that this play does contain adult themes.
Absolutely.
whatever that means. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9 on tomorrow's show. We will be having a conversation with a couple of members of the University of Illinois Symphony Orchestra, giving a concert on Saturday, and also with the conductor of the Sao Paulo Symphony, which is performing at the Krannert Center tomorrow night. Our program today is made possible with support by the Illinois State University School of Music. Friday at 8 p.m., the School of Music Wind and Percussion Studios, Wind Symphony, Symphonic Winds, and Jazz Combo perform a fast-paced program at ISU's Center for the Performing Arts. Coming up, news headlines, classical music for you at 106. The forecast calls for a partly sunny sky early this afternoon, then increasing cloudiness with a high of 54. Tonight, cloudy with a chance for showers in the evening. Rain likely after midnight, the low 39. And tomorrow, cloudy with some showers in the morning and a high of 48. It's currently 50. It's WYLL, FM and HD Urbana, operating translators W293 AF Danville and W266 AF Urbana.